It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Day has arrived once again this Wednesday. Also with us from our pool of political analysts joining us this week, Bruce Nesmith is with us, the Joan and Abbott Lipsky Professor of Political Science at Coe College. He joins us by phone. Hi, Bruce.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Good afternoon to you. Jim McCormick is in our Ames studio, Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Great to have you back as well, Jim.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And to come this hour, we have a big agenda, long agenda, but we want to get through a number of important developments this week, including just minutes ago, the president gave a statement about the beheading of the American journalist. That video of the beheading has been authenticated, American journalist Jim Foley. The president speaking about that moments ago, we'll bring that to you in its entirety. It's only about 5 minutes long. That statement by the president coming up a little bit later this hour as we discuss what's been happening in Iraq, but also the politics surrounding the violence in Ferguson, Missouri, and how it's impacting our image overseas. But before we get to that, this week, Bruce and Jim started with the news that Hillary Clinton will headline retiring Senator Tom Harkin's annual steak fry here in Iowa next month. Clinton and her husband, former President Bill Clinton, will address the Harkin steak fry. That's to be held September 14th in Indianola. Representative Bruce Braley, the Democratic nominee to succeed Harkin in the Senate, will also speak at the event. Hillary Clinton hasn't been here since caucus night in 2008 when she delivered her concession speech after finishing a disappointing third.
We have always planned to run a national campaign all the way through the early contests, because I want the people of America, and particularly Democrats and like-minded independents and Republicans who have seen the light, to understand, number one, that the stakes are huge, that the job is enormous, but that I believe we're going to make the right decision. There will be a lot of people who will get involved, as they have here in Iowa, of all ages. That is what we want, because we're not just trying to elect a president, we're trying to change our country. That is what I am committed to doing.
Hillary Clinton, the last time she was in Iowa back in 2008, Jim McCormick, remind us, take us back to, it's been 6 years, hard to believe, to
it
that dramatic.
Really is. Yeah, I mean, she finished third, and it was really a disappointing third. She finished behind Barack Obama and John Edwards, I think just by a point or so behind John Edwards. But Barack Obama did very well. I think, as I recall, it was like 37% that he got. Mm-hmm. So that was really a disappointing loss, because she had, of course, come onto the scene as kind of the nominee, and it was for the taking, and to finish third in the first caucus state was clearly disappointing here.
Bruce, how pivotal do you think that surprising loss in Iowa was to? How pivotal was that to her nomination loss?
I think it was certainly part of the equation. It wasn't all the equation. She tended to run a big state strategy through the early contests, and so Obama was able, in a proportional representation system, to clean up small packages of delegates from small states and overseas possessions. And so, maybe the state might only have 15 delegates if it's a really small state, but if you win 15, then that wound up tipping the balance in when they were splitting delegates in larger delegations.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk, Jim. Give us a quick survey of what she's been doing in the time between 2008 and the present. She became Secretary of State. She mended fences with her foe, Barack Obama.
Sure. I mean, she was somewhat surprisingly picked to be Secretary of State, although she had you know, obviously done her work in the Senate, was on the Armed Services Committee and had gained a reputation as sort of doing her homework and tending to her legislative duties. So she was in good stead to take on this role as Secretary of State. And, of course, what she's best known for as Secretary of State is the number of miles that she logged around the world trying to rebuild America's image here.
But what about, I mean, critics often say, where are the accomplishments?
Well, I was about to get to that. I mean, I think that's sort of the critique. And, of course, there were some, you know, hiccups that she's probably going to have to take account of. I mean, Benghazi is the one that immediately sort of leaps to mind, and trying to get a settlement in the Middle East. And the other one that leaps to mind, of course, is the Russian restart, which now has not come to great fruition. So it's hard to pick out her real successes, except that she did give this kind of image, create a different kind of image, as did the president, in terms of around the world after the Bush administration. But to point out, to identify some singular successes is a little more difficult. I mean, she would point to a global health initiative, but actually that was started by the Bush administration on AIDS and so on. But that was one of the things that she talked about. And she talked about combining diplomacy and development, she called for this review of the State Department, which was actually issued in 2011. So that there would be a greater integration of our foreign policy efforts instead of having them kind of kind of isolation from one another.
Mm-hmm. Clinton's return to Iowa, of course, stoking more speculation about her potential 2016 presidential campaign. Bruce, there isn't any doubt she's running, is there? Or what are the potential roadblocks between now and, I suppose, people are saying the declaration would have to come before the end of this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's always, until she officially announces, there's always a chance that she might not run. But I think it's been telegraphed about every possible way that she's running.
Mm-hmm. Jim, what do you see as roadblocks? What are her weaknesses or potential weaknesses? Do you see any perceptions that she may want to correct?
Well, just what we talked about in terms of what exactly was her record as Secretary of State. Of course, you know, she came out with the book about hard choices, and in some ways it's trying to lay down a marker for her in terms of what she has done and the kind of choices that she has made. And in the book, of course, she talks about how she has actually stood up to the president, even though he didn't take her advice, say, on Syria. And, of course, more recently in the last week or 10 days, that interview with The Atlantic in which we talked about the lack of really guiding principles, basically, in terms of the Obama foreign policy. Don't do stupid stuff is not a guiding principle was sort of the quotation from that article here. So I think what her record is and how close she is to the administration are really going to be the kind of challenges that she's going to face. I don't think she's going to have much of a challenge within the party. Despite, you know, all of these rumors, maybe Elizabeth Warren, I think all of these other candidates are going to go by the wayside if she really announces that she is going to run, plus she's going to have a ton of money and so on to fend off any challengers. I would be not surprised to hear Joe Biden, as we got closer to, I think after the November elections is when she's going to, you know, ramp up things to see what the lay of the land is in terms of the Congress, and then I think we'll see more action as well.
Mm-hmm. That fresh face you mentioned, Elizabeth Warren. Bruce Nesmith, do you see her at all openly challenging Hillary Clinton?
Well, she's made several statements that she's not running, so I would be surprised. I think for any candidate getting in, I mean, politicians are all strategic as well as ambitious, and so you have to think about how much money do you have to raise, how much name recognition gap do you have to make up, and I think, as Jim pointed out, that it's highly likely that Hillary Clinton will start out with substantial advantages in both of those categories. So it would be, you know, maybe polling would turn up some unlikely, or some at least unknown to me weaknesses among the Democratic electorate. Maybe they're tired of Clinton's or something like that, or maybe there are big donors out there who don't want to give to Hillary Clinton or are looking for somebody else. You know, those kinds of things would encourage people to get in the race, but the absence of those kind of things would discourage people from getting into the race.
What about Hillary Clinton's involvement in the midterm election campaigning? She's coming here. She'll be she and her husband, a former president, will be on the same stage with Bruce Braley, a pivotal race in this struggle to control the Senate, Jim McCormick.
I don't think that's been her tactic, really, is to look at these November elections. Actually, Elizabeth Warren has been more that kind of a politician, trying to bolster candidates that are up for the November election. I think my read of this is that she wants to kind of skim over this November election and to see what happens afterwards. Then I think the big other thing that I would just add to what Bruce said is that she's got to decide at what juncture she's going to break with the administration. I mean, she's already kind of have a crack here on foreign policy.
She tried to, and it didn't work very well, did it?
It did not work very well, but she sort of stepped back from it and gave the president a hug, apparently, or whatever. But I think at some juncture she's got to do that. She's got to demonstrate that she's on her own, especially if the approval ratings of the president, stay around the 40%, 42% range here. And I just noticed a poll on foreign policy. The disapproval of foreign policy is in a New York Times poll is at 58%. So I think she has some room to separate herself out here.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about other White House ambitions, those not of Hillary Clinton or Elizabeth Warren. Yesterday in Austin, Texas, Governor Rick Perry was booked after being indicted last week on felony charges that he abused his authority when trying to force a Democratic district attorney from office. At a news conference this weekend, the Texas governor defended his veto of funding to the attorney general's office and said he would fight to protect the powers granted to him by the state constitution.
We don't settle political differences with indictments in this country. It is outrageous that some would use partisan political theatrics to rip away at the very fabric of our state's constitution. This indictment amounts to nothing more than abuse of power. And I cannot and I will not allow that to happen.
Governor of Texas Rick Perry. Bruce Nassmith, what do you think this does to his presidential hopes?
It might help. I don't know that he had very many presidential hopes to begin with, realistically, and may not now. But this gives people something else to think about in terms of Governor Perry. And I think for most people outside of Texas and maybe outside of the political insiders, what they mainly remember of Governor Perry is the failure in the debate in 2011, which was not, an atypical moment for him. He was in Cedar Rapids and had a similar kind of response to a question from the audience. Now they've got him, embattled, picked on by Harris County prosecutors. This is a much better way, I think, at least for Republican audiences, a much better way to be known than the guy who forgot stuff in 2012.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, really, Jim McCormick, do you agree? Could he win some sympathy here and spin this to his advantage?
Just it gives him name recognition around the country.
Did he need that?
I think Bruce points right. I mean, he certainly has been trying to raise his profile, and this will raise his profile. You know, they did have online the actual indictment that was issued. It really does. I did read it yesterday, and it's really quite stunning. I mean, in terms of why he would be indicted for vetoing, some spending bill. Given that that's what governors do. So, I guess I'm in sympathy with those who have said this is kind of a flimsy sort of indictment here. I just haven't heard a good explanation of how he violated the law. I mean, I'd be interested if our callers had mm-hmm. some you know, explanation of exactly what was the violation of the law here.
We'll throw out that number for with that question or any other comments or questions, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Flimsy is the word that you used, Jim. Former Obama advisor David Axelrod posted on Twitter, quote, unless he was demonstrably trying to scrap the ethics unit for other than his stated reason, Perry indictment seems pretty sketchy. He says sketchy. You say flimsy. All right. How was his recovery and remake? And this was a recovery from that big, big gaffe in the presidential debate that he made. He lost the cowboy boots. Well, I haven't looked at his footwear, but okay, he lost the cowboy hat. That whole image. He dons glasses now and is remade as an elder statesman of sort. How is that going, Jim?
Well, I mean, he's come to Iowa. I think he's been to Iowa now four times. In the last couple years here, and so that has got him some exposure, certainly within this state. And then the other way he has built his image, of course, was on the immigration issue. He's had this kind of, if you will, calling out the National Guard in Texas and seemingly sort of standing up to the president. You know, they met on the tarmac, and then they had the 15-minute meeting in the hangar in Texas and so on when the president would not go to the border. So that has been part of his image as, this particular issue that he hopes to drive, I think, beyond the Texas borders here.
Let's move on to other political news. Well, our main national news, which has a big political dimension to it. Attorney General Eric Holder is in Ferguson, Missouri today to meet with the FBI and law enforcement officials as well as community leaders. He's making the trip primarily to meet with the principal players surrounding this shooting of Michael Brown, the black 18-year-old gunned down by a white Ferguson police officer back on August 9th. Here's some of what President Obama said when he announced earlier this week that he would send Holder to Ferguson to conduct a federal civil rights investigation.
We have all seen images of protesters and law enforcement in the streets. It's clear that the vast majority of people are peacefully protesting. What's also clear is that a small minority of individuals are not. While I understand the passions and the anger that arise over the death of Michael Brown, giving into that anger by looting or carrying guns and even attacking the police only serves to raise tensions and stir chaos. It undermines rather than advancing justice. Let me also be clear that our constitutional rights to speak freely, to assemble, and to report in the press must be vigilantly safeguarded, especially in moments like these. There's no excuse for excessive force by police or any action that denies people the right to protest peacefully. Ours is a nation of laws for the citizens who live under them and for the citizens who enforce them. So to a community in Ferguson that is rightly hurting and looking for answers, let me call once again for us to seek some understanding rather than simply holler at each other. Let's seek to heal rather than to wound each other. As Americans, we've got to use this moment to seek out our shared humanity that's been laid bare by this moment.
President Obama earlier this week announcing that Eric Holder, the Attorney General, would be sent to Ferguson, Missouri. He is at this hour there, we understand. Why send Holder? What effect does that have, Bruce Nesmith, you think?
Well, I think it alters the balance of the conversation. Just as the Missouri Governor Jay Nixon attempted to do a few days ago by sending in the National Guard, it creates maybe not action, but at least the appearance of action. The appearance of attention, the appearance of people trying to sort this out and achieve some kind of resolution, as opposed to an ongoing verbal and, in some cases, physical standoff.
Mm-hmm. Jim McCormick, more than appearances here by the president through the attorney general?
Well, I think the Attorney General, of course, on kind of racial issues has really been quite vigorous, particularly racial issues involving police. And I think, you know, this is probably trying to send that same kind of support that that he wants this address. I mean, he has been known for, you know, initiating a number of civil rights lawsuits, and I suspect this is going to be part of the calculation here.
A federal civil rights investigation, is that a big deal? I mean, that doesn't happen every day or every year, does it?
No, it does not. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of, I know that they just had the grand jury convened, I think, today to start the investigation to see if there really is an indictment. I know the governor last night said, the governor of Missouri said, you know, let the prosecution begin. But that was probably mischosen words on his part, because they really want to find out if there's going to be a true bill issue or an indictment issued with regard to this incident, or sort of find out the facts and get the facts on the table. And I think the Attorney General, through his good offices, can sort of move that process along.
Mm-hmm. The presidential visit has not been ruled out to Ferguson, to my knowledge. Bruce Nesmith, should he go? What would be that purpose?
Well, that's a good question. Obama has, and we just referenced, Jim referenced his not going to the border when he went to Texas. He has tended to, I think, through his administration, not wanting to go to crisis points of crisis to show the, you know, the presidential flag, I guess. So what would it accomplish? You know, he's certainly not going to do any work there, right? So that would be, you know, unlike Holder, that would be a purely symbolic act, and maybe it would be an act of solidarity, an act of with you know, maybe one or both sides, you know, that's an act that, you know, yes, I'm the president and here I am and everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on possibly the president going to Ferguson, Jim?
Yeah, I think it's probably not a good idea. I think, you know, the situation there has not, you know, been tempered very much. I mean, they've had now 10 or 11 straight days of these kind of protests and confrontations as well. I think what they really need is a cooling off period. And I think that going forward with the legal process and the inquiry of the legal process is probably the best way to proceed, rather than any further efforts to politicize the situation.
All right. Jim McCormick is with us of Iowa State University. Bruce Nesmith of Coke College, as we're dissecting, analyzing the politics as of late, talking about the violence in Ferguson continuing since that killing on August 9th. We're going to continue talking about that, including a new poll from the Pew Research Center showing that blacks and whites have sharply different reactions to that shooting. We'll talk about that. Also, international reaction, at least through the press, to what's happening here on our shores. And we will get to what's happening in Iraq and the president's statement. That's to come when we return. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Wonderful to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday with Jim McCormick of Iowa State University and Bruce Nesmith of Coe College. And we're in the midst of talking about the political dimensions of the violence in Ferguson, Missouri, since the shooting of Michael Brown, that 18-year-old black young man gunned down by a white Ferguson police officer, and the violence that has ensued. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. A little bit later, we want to talk about developments in Iraq, also the authentication of that video showing the beheading of Jim Foley, American journalist in Iraq. We'll get thoughts from our analysts on that as well. But let's, gentlemen, have you comment on this new national survey by the Pew Research Center showing blacks and whites having sharply different reactions to the police shooting of this unarmed teen in Ferguson, Missouri. Blacks are about twice as likely as whites to say the shooting of Michael Brown, quote, raises important issues about race that need to be discussed. Also, wide racial differences evident in opinions about whether local police went too far in the aftermath of Brown's death. Bruce Nesmith, what does this tell you?
Well, that blacks and whites have had very different historical experiences in the United States, that they continue to have very different historical and socioeconomic experiences, and that leads to different paradigms or different lenses through which they see the world.
Mm-hmm. Far from being post-racial, Jim McCormick, we are in the year 2014, and we have riots that seem to have quite a racial dimension.
Yes, I can recall back to the riots of the 1960s. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm of that that age. But and that was obviously a very difficult time as well. But the interesting thing about the poll is not, or interesting or confounding, I guess, is that there's not only the divisions on race, but it's if you look at all of the other categories, if you look at in terms of party ID on education. And on age, for example, there are also these differences in terms of looking at the issue of race. So that is a little bit discouraging about how far we've come or have not really come in terms of addressing the issue of race here. So the divisions are pretty widespread, and it's a reflection of our polarization that has occurred,
right,
in the political process.
That's
here.
What I wanted to say. What does it reflect in our politics?
It
reflects our politics as highly partisan or highly pigeonholed. If you say who you are, you give me your demographic, I will tell you what you think. Is that possibly something here?
I think that's always been probably the case, probably with a more defining kind of characteristic now than maybe in recent decades or so, because of the polarization has become so sharply focused on these kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's less so, if I might add, on foreign policy issues, which I happen to deal with. But
right.
but on domestic issues, this kind of polarization really does come through on this, not only on race, but on all of these other dimensions, on the questions that you talked about in terms of whether this case raises the questions of race or how the police have handled it or not handled it and so on. So that is pretty discouraging in terms of addressing our politics.
Mm-hmm. Bruce Nesmith, you see it as an extension of the politics of our day and age.
Sure. And it is important to realize that I don't think any of the polling results were 100-0. But, there is definitely people have different experiences and live different lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, a lot of what a lot of people experience is a lack of economic opportunity, which becomes very discouraging and frustrating. And maybe that doesn't lead, immediately to lashing out, but then it just takes a spark, a shooting or something like this, a spark just to cause that to explode.
Interesting international coverage of the ongoing protests in Ferguson, Missouri. We wanted a quick survey of that. In your comment here, Al Jazeera America had a survey of from different countries reflected through their media. More or less confirming pre-existing views of the United States. Let's start with those who have a less than kind attitude towards the U.S. in terms of government to government. Russia and Iranian media, not surprising, scathing judgments about the police response to the protest in Missouri. One Russian article poking fun at the notion of a land of opportunity, signaling that America's race war proves Washington's hypocrisy. Jim, I know you look at Chinese media and their reaction. Ferguson riot reveals U.S. racial divide and human rights flaw. And the author of that Chinese article ripping to the United States for aggressively advocating human rights abroad while failing to address simmering issues at home, Jim.
Well, that has become a common theme, across the international arena about whether, particularly if you go back a few decades in terms of promoting human rights and then not having all of those rights always well respected at home. I think the other thing that comes across on this is the degree to which gun violence and guns and violence within the U.S. are kind of a permanent theme of the international media in terms of talking about the United States, because of course Internationally, gun laws are much different than in the U.S.
In Iran, even the Supreme Leader taking to his Facebook page on Sunday, quote, "Look what they do to the black community in their own country. The police may beat them to death over the crime of having dark skins." Some German news portals similarly critical. Well, this is more about the political police militarization, scathing evaluations of society here with a quick deployment of weapons in France. Some media there going after police militarization in our country. Bruce, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm a little biased here because I study American politics and society, but I think America is fascinating to a lot of people. And fascinating because partly because we were founded as a idealistic kind of liberation movement for human freedom. And so a different type of founding than a lot of countries have had. And the principles of individualism, which, you know, come across both as great freedom for entrepreneurs and great freedom for people to own guns. A lot of the ways in which America is different, and then how, as Jim pointed out, how we've projected our values on human rights, sometimes annoyingly, across the world. I think people find America to be a unique and interesting place, whether they like it or not, is a different question. But I think that, you know, what goes on in America is very interesting to people all over the world.
I want to mention that we posted a link to that Pew poll we've been talking about, the Pew Research Center's poll on the racial divide and attitudes towards the violence in Ferguson on our Facebook page. Go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page and like us, of course.
There's just one other fact about that poll I wanted to just add. I didn't see an income breakdown. I would be very interested with these data to see, because how much of these attitudes are also income derived here.
You don't think maybe it's not just race, but socioeconomic?
I think so. I mean, they obviously are linked together, but it would be interesting to also have the income breakdown, because talking to some of my colleagues about that, they really talk about what kind of a community is Ferguson. Is it middle class, lower class? What are the income breakdowns? Also, may well play into some of this, or likely plays into this.
Okay, that link on our Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Also, a reminder, programming note, that tomorrow the entire hour we'll be devoting to other aspects of the violence in Ferguson, Missouri. But let's move on. Politics Day with Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Bruce Nesmith of Coe College. Let's talk about what's been happening in Iraq, the latest headlines there. The Islamic State of Iraq has beheaded an American photojournalist, has threatened the life of another American photojournalist if President Obama doesn't stop airstrikes in Iraq. We had this graphic video showing Jim Foley, a freelance journalist for the U.S., based news service Global Post. He was kidnapped while reporting from Syria 2 years ago. During this video, before being beheaded, reciting threats against America, then executed by a militant there. President Obama spoke within the last hour from Martha's Vineyard, gave a statement on that. It's about 5 minutes long. Let's listen to what the president, within the last few minutes, had to say about the situation and the beheading, which is of a video that has now been authenticated.
Today, the entire world is appalled by the brutal murder of Jim Foley by the terrorist group ISIL. Jim was a journalist, a son, a brother, and a friend. He reported from difficult and dangerous places, bearing witness to the lives of people a world away. He was taken hostage nearly 2 years ago in Syria, and he was courageously reporting at the time on the conflict there. Jim was taken from us in an act of violence that shocks the conscience of the entire world. He was 40 years old, one of five siblings, the son of a mom and dad who worked tirelessly for his release. Earlier today, I spoke to the Foleys and told them that we are all heartbroken at their loss and joined them in honoring Jim and all that he did. Now, Jim Foley's life stands in stark contrast to his killers. Let's be clear about ISIL. They have rampaged across cities and villages, killing innocent, unarmed civilians in cowardly acts of violence. They abduct women and children and subject them to torture and rape and slavery. They have murdered Muslims, both Sunni and Shia, by the thousands. They target Christians and religious minorities, driving them from their homes, murdering them when they can, for no other reason than they practice a different religion. They declare their ambition to commit genocide against an ancient people. So ISIL speaks for no religion. Their victims are overwhelmingly Muslim, and no faith teaches people to massacre innocents. No just God would stand for what they did yesterday and what they do every single day. ISIL has no ideology of any value to human beings. Their ideology is bankrupt. They may claim out of expediency that they are at war with the United States or the West, but the fact is they terrorize their neighbors and offer them nothing but an endless slavery to their empty vision and the collapse of any definition of civilized behavior. And people like this ultimately fail. They fail because the future is won by those who build and not destroy. And the world is shaped by people like Jim Foley and the overwhelming majority of humanity who are appalled by those who killed him. The United States of America will continue to do what we must do to protect our people. We will be vigilant and we will be relentless. When people harm Americans anywhere, we do what's necessary to see that justice is done, and we act against ISIL, standing alongside others. The people of Iraq, who with our support are taking the fight to ISIL, must continue coming together to expel these terrorists from their communities. The people of Syria, whose story Jim Foley told, do not deserve to live under the shadow of a tyrant or terrorists. They have our support in their pursuit of a future rooted in dignity. From governments and peoples across the Middle East, there has to be a common effort to extract this cancer so that it does not spread. There has to be a clear rejection of these kind of nihilistic ideologies. One thing we can all agree on is that a group like ISIL has no place in the 21st century. Friends and allies around the world, we share a common security and a common set of values that are rooted in the opposite of what we saw yesterday, and we will continue to confront this hateful terrorism and replace it with a sense of hope and civility. And that's what Jim Foley stood for, a man who lived his work, who courageously told the stories of his fellow human beings, and who was liked and loved by friends and family. Today, the American people will all say a prayer for those who love Jim. All of us feel the ache of his absence. All of us mourn his loss. We keep in our prayers those other Americans who are separated from their families. We will do everything that we can to protect our people and the timeless values that we stand for. May God bless and keep Jim's memory, and may God bless the United States of America.
President Obama speaking just about an hour ago on Martha's Vineyard there, a statement about the authentication of the video that shows the beheading of Jim Foley, American journalist, by the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. That's the ISIL that the president kept referring to. Jim McCormick, what do you hear in the president's words?
Well, I thought it was a powerful statement, really, and I think what it does is to move the administration one step further to continue the kind of effort that they, you know, announced on, I guess it was August 7th or so, in which they were going to start some airstrikes and to make certain for the safety of American officials and also that humanitarian effort with the religious minority in the Kurdish area. I think the president didn't say it, but he said at the very towards the very end, he talked about that was standing with allies and friends. You know, they obviously the U.S. wouldn't do it alone, but they would take on ISIL. So I think it's more a movement of trying to say to the American people and maybe to the international system, or surely to the international system, that the United States is going to continue this effort against ISIL. I don't think that was the case, you know, because this, of course, ISIL had come on the scene a couple months ago, and the administration was hesitant to do very much.
Mm-hmm. You really hear not only in his words the condemnation here, but Jim and Bruce, it really came across that his tone was upset. It was not simply reading from a teleprompter. He's engaged and upset here.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. He's not that good of an actor, so I think those are probably pretty genuine feelings, and feelings that, you know, probably everyone shares that have been aware of this incident.
I mean, this incident may well be a tipping point for the administration, it seems to me, in terms of going forward. They were certainly already carrying out airstrikes to seize back the Mosul Dam, but I think that this incident, you know, gives more impetus to the administration to move forward. I mean, this is just a despicable kind of action, and you know, they're threatening to apparently behead another journalist, from what I heard in one report.
You said tipping point, Jim. The U.S. military has had this recent success weakening the Islamic State extremists, pushing them away from the key dam, the Mosul Dam in Iraq. Tipping point to a broader campaign for American air power, you think, Jim?
I think broader American air power, I would think so. I mean, the president is obviously going to be very firm, and the public is not going to be supportive of putting American forces back on the ground. But I think that the use of drones and airstrikes will likely continue, as the problem really becomes whether there are, you know, access points to use that American air power, given that ISIL is intermingled with civilian populations.
What about the other Arab countries, other Muslim countries in the area? Are they on board with this, Jim?
Well, that's a very good question here. I mean, obviously, Iran would love to see the American carry the fight, you know, because they, you know, have no great need for ISIL. The problem is some of the Gulf states, you know, are of two minds here. Saudi Arabia is the one that comes to mind, and Qatar. You know, I mean, are they going to be on board in terms of taking this action? Because, you know, their concern, of course, is with Iran getting too strong and the Shia population in both Iraq and Iran being too dominant. So they want to support the Sunnis. But these are not Sunnis that they should be supporting.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk briefly about Gaza. We only have about a minute to do so. Jim, can I turn to you? Israel says more than 70 rockets fired from the Gaza Strip in the past 24 hours, leading to a response of 60 airstrikes, very short-lived ceasefire with Hamas breaking down yesterday. Palestinians say at least 11 people died in Israel's strikes. Any end in sight? Anything scenario you can see where this ends? How?
Well, I think we have to just trudge along in terms of trying to get a diplomatic ceasefire and to put it in place. I would like to see more action by the UN. I was sort of discouraged to see a report by the UN Secretary General saying that, you know, he can only bring these people to the river, but he can't make them drink and so on. I think the Secretary General, when the UN has been effective, is when the Secretary General himself, and in all of the instances in the past, has actually been a much more potent international diplomat. And I think that's the one additional factor that I'd like to see in this equation.
Well, thank you very much, Jim McCormick, professor of political science at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Bruce Nesmith, always a joy to have you as well, the Joan and Abbott Lipsky professor of political science at Coe College. Thank you both for joining us with your insights today.
Thanks,
Thank
Ben.
You. Thank you very much.
Another programming note about politics. Perhaps you heard Clay Masters' piece on the open Senate race between Joni Ernst and Bruce Braley this morning on Morning Edition. If not, you can hear it this afternoon on All Things Considered, or go to our website to hear the podcast. Also, the opportunity on our website to tell us which issues are most important to you in this race by becoming part of IPR's Public Insight Network. You just go to the website. There's a link there with pin on the web up in the upper right-hand side. Tell us what you think. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. We had help today from Jason Burns in Ames. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.